This is Five Love Languages of Children on Sunday, March 19th. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thanks for stopping in this morning. So, a bit of background for folks that are new and haven't been the first couple of weeks. We are exploring how to better communicate love to our children using the book Five Love Languages of Children as a guidepost. No prerequisite to have ever read nor heard of this book to participate in class this morning, just sort of a facilitator for discussion, which is particularly important because I do not have a background or degree, advanced or any type of degree in childhood development or psychology, and as my wife in the back row can attest to, I'm not even the primary caregiver in our household, so... But I was tapped to at least help facilitate the discussion. And so what we've explored in the past couple of weeks, in the first week we talked about the idea of providing unconditional love to our children and filling the metaphor used in this is the child's emotional love tank. And to do so most effectively is by finding out what the best way to communicate love is to, i.e. the love language of our children. And so this book sets forth five love languages. One is physical touch. The second is words of affirmation. The third is quality time. The fourth is gifts. Morning. And the fifth is acts of service. And so we are exploring these five in the order in which the book addresses them, not to say one is more important than the other, just that's how we're following it. So in the first week we talked about physical touch. The second week we talked about words of affirmation. And today we're actually going to double up and talk about quality time as well as gifts. Just because I think, one, gifts can take a little bit less of our time. I think it's probably an easier topic to wrap our heads around than some of the others, which are more of amorphous concepts. And two, I think that opens us up in the last couple of weeks to explore, once we've talked about all of these five love languages, how do we better identify each of them within our children, and how do we sort of implement them not only in, you know, sort of communicating love to our children, but things like discipline and other areas where in rearing of our children. So, as I've done the past couple of weeks, there's a sort of a passage that I want to read from the book, sort of setting forth, as we talk about quality time, what do we actually mean by that? And so, as they define it here, as quality time is focused, undivided attention, and as a gift, the parent's gift of presence to a child. It conveys the message, you are important, I like being with you. It makes the child feel that he or she is the most important person in the world to the parent. They feel truly loved because they have the parent all to themselves. And so sort of the words I want to focus on there are focused and undivided. And this is sort of a trap I actually fall into myself when thinking about time I spend with my children, particularly my oldest, because we do a lot of things together in the form of taking them to soccer practices or taking them to soccer games. And, you know, I think of, oh, I spent a bunch of time with them over the weekend, but really I was sort of on the sidelines. Wasn't sort of one-on-one time where we're actually communicating with each other and talking. And so I think that's or would more fall in the acts of service bucket, which we haven't talked on, things you're doing for your children, but I want to express that because that's something I fall into myself. And so we spend so much time doing those things that he has to do, I don't really find myself having sort of one-on-one time. And this is particularly in the context of having three children. And so I guess the focus is not on the activity itself, on you doing something, but on the actual time that you're spending with your child. And so one of the things I want to open up for discussion is sort of how do we balance this with work and daily life, but also for the folks who have multiple children in the room, how do we focus on one-on-one time with each of our children and sort of just finding a balance. And I, once again, as I've said in prior weeks, I'd love to hear from it because I am not an expert on this. I often don't do this well. So I'm curious on how people have managed to do this and balance time and also balance focused attention on each of your children. So with that, you know, happy to hear from anybody who has anything to add. And as I mentioned, I do cold call. So if somebody's not going to, and since it's my wife's first week attending, maybe we'll see if she has anything.
You took my story. That was the same thing. I think how we've talked about that a lot, how our whole Saturday will be filled. We took James to his soccer game, took somebody to a birthday party, did something, and like you'll say, I spent all day with them, and I'll be like, well, you spent all day taking in places, but not with them. And maybe you guys should just go do something, the two of you, that's not competitive, because sometimes you're both competitive people. Like something together where you're just...
I'd say that's an understatement, but it was...
You know, so we talked about that. And no, I don't think we figured it out exactly, but it's just being aware of it, that not... That just because you're with them all day doesn't actually mean you're with them, engaging with them in a meaningful way sometimes.
I think it's hard to... I just have one child, but he's three, and it's hard for me to sometimes to meet him where he is, because my idea of quality time or of doing something, I don't know, it's hard for me to... You know, like getting down on the floor and playing with Hot Wheels cars is just really not, that's what he wants to do. And so it's trying to figure out what exactly would be that focused time that we could do together. I mean, I think for us, probably maybe that, you know, when we read stories together, like our bedtime routine or something like that, would probably be the most sort of focused one-on-one time that we have. But a lot of it is just that he's into stuff that's hard for me to, and I realize that, the, you know, I'm, as the parent, maybe I'm just supposed to be, you know, put myself where he is or something, but I can't do that a lot of times. I can't do it. So...
I feel your pain on that, particularly with my daughter, because her idea of quality time is playing Barbies or princesses, and try as I might, I just can't get my head around it. I mean, and so, I mean, it's frankly easier, you know, with particularly my 8-year-old, when we do actually find the time. I think, you know, I took off a day this week for spring break, and we went out and actually we played golf, and so that was actually something he loved. I think he actually liked the one-on-one time more than he actually liked the activity of golf. Which is good, because we're both equally terrible at the sport. He has an excuse, because he's 7. But yeah, I mean, I think one of the things they talk about here is trying to bring yourself to the child's level of emotional development. So it's, you know, getting down with small children, playing, you know, Legos or cars with them, or, you know, playing princesses with your daughter. And it takes a lot of energy, that particularly for the, you know, if you're, you have other things going on all day, and trying to find the energy to do that can be really difficult. Yes?
I actually read something that was really good with that, like with doing things that you don't like to do sometimes, is say if you set a timer of your own that's like 10 minutes, and you, for that 10 minutes, you're fully engaged in the Hot Wheels or the Legos, and that's a lot to them, especially if you're really there, and then when it's done, you can know you like put in your time, but then be like, okay, now you can play by yourself, or you can do this, but you gave them that, like, 10 minutes that was fully engaged, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then you're not dreading it also while you're doing it. You're like, I know this has an ending point.
I know how I'm going to get myself out of this. That makes sense.
So, you know, one, obviously, finding the time can be difficult, balancing with children. But two, sort of focusing on what is the goal of the spending of the quality time. It's not just being present, but I think at least one of the things they talk about in the book is that the intended outcome of this quality time is not just about time spent, but about knowing your child better, particularly as they get older. The goal of this quality time, the natural result is conversation about your lives, about what's going on. And, you know, as you start to focus on your child's moral and ethical development, you know, it's easier to have difficult conversations if they arise more naturally through time spent, rather than sort of one-off, like, okay, well, you know, we actually just got done having the, you know, the prior class with, you know, Casey walking us through how to have the sex talk with our children. Well, once again, not an expert on that conversation, because I've not had that conversation with any of my children yet. But I would imagine that it's probably easier, to the extent that you're spending more time with your child on other unrelated matters. You're used to having comfortable conversations with them, for you to address issues such as that, as opposed to if you're not spending a lot of time with them, and all of a sudden you're sitting there one day like, hey, let's talk. And so the idea is that this quality time creates opportunity to discuss more important issues. And I think, once again, tying into, well, we're in church this morning, so we should probably discuss, have there been experiences that you've had in spending time with your children where you've found that it has evolved into more natural conversation with maybe about things that we address here in church or about other things they may be facing out in the world? And this is particularly for parents of children who are probably 7, 8 and older as they're starting, because from the time about 0 to 7, sort of the quality time is spent within the home. They're not really facing a lot outwardly in the world, but sort of if there's been experiences as sort of elementary school and older children, whether you've seen sort of times you've been spending time with them and there's been time for or developed more meaningful conversation. Or not even with your own children, maybe if you can remember something that you had growing up. So, like I said, I'm a facilitator, not a teacher, so please share if you feel comfortable.
A little bit on that wavelength, but my 12-year-old is very quiet, and she's becoming quieter as she gets older. And so I'm sort of, to get her to have conversations about things, I have to just sort of be lingering around, and try to get her sister out of the picture, because she competes for attention. When she sees that we're giving Emma attention, she doesn't like it. And she's, so when Maggie's not around, Maggie's playing with a friend, then sometimes I'll just go into Emma's room and just sit there and just have like a real casual conversation. And then sometimes things will come up. But the other thing that I try to be really aware of is because she is so quiet, when she does say something to me, I try to give her all of my attention, because that's kind of, I want her to feel like she's being heard. And if I'm not really engaged at that point, I'm missing those opportunities to make her feel listened to and make her feel like she's got our love and attention. She's just a different, everyone's different. My other daughter just demands attention all the time. But so I have to be aware of that, because it's real easy to give her, the one that's demanding it all the time, give her all this attention and then ignore Emma because she's so quiet. But some conversations, deeper conversations have sprouted out of that, just having the time without my phone or whatever.
And something I meant to point out is this isn't just children focused. I think this is, at least the book makes the point, this is something that we never outgrow, is, conversations with our parents, whether as children or adults, is a lot easier if you're spending other time unrelated to the topic at hand. I've shared in past couple weeks that, I always felt loved as a kid. I think I have a decent, at worst decent, at best good relationship with my parents. But that I didn't spend a whole lot of what I would call quality time with them. I was the oldest, was a little more independent. I think my brother and sister needed a little more of that attention from my parents. But to this day, I don't really have deep, meaningful conversations with them, just because I'm not used to spending unrelated time with them. And so if something like that comes up, it's sort of, why are we talking about this? We don't talk about other sort of lighthearted fare. Why are we having this conversation? So I think I've carried that with me to this day. And so something that whether I'm passing or failing or something in between, trying to be cognizant of as I spend time and talk to my children. But that's sort of something that I've always taken with me since childhood. So I just wanted to throw that out there. So I think one of the things they talk about in the book in terms of as we struggle to find quality time is sort of planning for routine, because it's very easy to slip into the trap of, oh, I'm busy, I've got something else going on. So are there routines that we can set with our children on either a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis, just so we know at this time, okay, this is what we're doing. We're going to have one-on-one time. Some of the examples they talk about here in the, or as children younger, bedtime stories being a perfect opportunity for that. Whether it's, family dinner or breakfast, or sort of just a weekly or monthly thing, like, I go camping with my son or daughter on X date, whether it's once, twice a year. So I think they said the use of routine can be very, very, very helpful in trying to find this. And so, actually, one of the things that I've done with my 8-year-old, I'm still struggling on how to do this with my, well, particularly my 2-year-old, but my 8-year-old and I have monthly haircuts. We go to the same place, sort of, we hang out for 30 minutes beforehand, and then we most of the time go grab lunch at the same place next door, and that's sort of our monthly. It's, we know it's coming, it's just the two of us together. My 4-year-old picked up on that and was displeased, and so in response, I think we've tried to go to, it's probably been maybe not quite monthly, but trying to do, now we have Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon coffee days, so my daughter and I go to La Madeleine, she sits there, has a piece of cheesecake, and I have a cup of coffee, and we just hang out. So I'm bad, you know, I work a lot, and so I'm not there for dinners or breakfast for the most part, but I can at least try and set aside some of those periodic times where I don't care what else I've got going on. This is that 30 minutes or this is that hour that we're doing that. So that's been helpful for me. I don't know whether anybody else is sort of in the group has had similar experiences that they've been able to implement, or success or failure, happy to hear about.
I mean, I think that's the answer. You have to be intentional with your time. And, I mean, to your point, I find myself in the same situation with 3 little girls, and there's only so much princesses and Barbies and, you know, silly makeup stuff that I can take. But, you know, like, for example, my middle daughter, who's 5, she wants to do family game night, which would be perfect. Too often we do family night on Friday nights, but it's family movie night, which is not interactive, and it's not, you know, talking to them or seeing what, learning more about them. Both my husband and I work, so our time is super limited, and, you know, I don't know if any other working parents have experienced that awful feeling. Like, sometimes I feel like I don't even know my own child, you know, this other caretakers spend so much more time with her during the day, all 3 of them, I mean. But to your point, you know, it's kind of like, to me, it's kind of like physical exercise. It's like you don't always want to do it. I mean, that's the awful thing that we shouldn't say as parents, but I'll join you and say it. Sometimes I don't want to do family board night, or game night, but if we do it, I love it. And I spend that quiet time with them, and we have those interactions that I don't get on a daily basis. So I think you just have to be intentional about it. My oldest daughter, we have 3 at home, and I have a stepdaughter who's 18, but my oldest one at home is 7, and we've taken our habit is to, like, have a little quiet time before bed. Too often times I'm distracted by the other ones vying for our attention, the 3-year-old and the 5-year-old, with their bedtime routine. But I told her, I said, you know, we've taken to having little talks before bedtime. I'll lie in bed with her and, like, just focus on her when I can. But I told her, if you have something going on that you need to talk to me and I'm too busy with those guys, you tell me, Mommy, I need to talk. You know, we kind of have a code word. So that's my kind of hopeful solution of how to carve out time for her and for her to be able to tap me if I'm not doing that, if I find myself lapsing into our normal routines. So hopefully we'll stop doing movie night and do good night too. Make that intentional time.
Don't dismiss movie night, though, because movies aren't a bad thing, because they can be, you can communicate through those. When I was in college, my roommates used to always make fun of me whenever I talked to my brothers or other family members and say, do you ever talk with original sentences or just quote movies? It's just, you know, it's a way to spend time, but even with our little kids, they'll talk about movies, you know, and the themes in movies, they get it, so it is a way to communicate and have that focus time with them, you know, if you choose. And it is, you know, watching together, it's, you have that physical contact sometimes too, because, you know, you're cuddling, watching a movie or something. It's valuable.
There's lots of value in it. Yeah. I find that we spend a lot of our time, and there's cuddling and there's, you know, affection, but we spend a lot of time, you know, just because my husband and I just need to decompress and just watch TV, you know, or whatever. Yep. So we have our shows, and I know they value that,
but I
don't find myself talking like I need to. So another intentional thing I try to do is, you know, pick up from daycare or something. I'm trying to, like, ask them about their day, or what are the 3 favorite things about your day, or the 3 bad things, or whatever, you know, try to engage them rather than just zone off into NPR. You know, and let them just bicker among themselves, you know, so I'm trying to be more intentional. It's an ongoing struggle.
Car times can be really good because even though it's not, I mean, obviously it's not completely unfocused, you can't be completely unfocused if you're driving, but I think because you're not necessarily sitting, like, staring at each other in the eyes, and I've heard other, like, parenting speakers talk about that, that there's something about being kind of shoulder to shoulder with somebody, or, you know, whatever, instead of, you know, staring somebody in the face, that you, people will kind of talk more openly and mm-hmm. reveal more, and it's kind of nice. And so I think kids will sometimes open up more in the car than they will at other times.
Yeah, we've had some good help from you. Yeah. And thank you for validating my movie night, too. I know they look forward to it, and it's a chair. You know, I feel like, I hope we're building those cherished family traditions. Because, I mean, my parents and we did a lot of stuff together, but I don't remember something on the routine, you know, like, except for family dinner, but, you know, mm-hmm. something recreational, I guess, you know, vacations and stuff, but...
I talked about like how the Wonderful World of Disney used to be Sunday nights, and mm-hmm. that was big in her family. It was big in my family, and so like we've even watched Escape to Witch Mountain or something.
Oh yeah. Okay, take that back. Old. In fairness to my dad, we would come home from church and we would watch Tarzan movies every Sunday. We watched Lone Ranger and then we watched Tarzan. Every Johnny Westmuller, the old good stuff. So in fairness to my dad, that's something we did. We did have like family movies.
Yeah, last night we did let my 8-year-old stay up late and we watched the Swiss Family Robinson with him because he had just finished reading the sort of the abridged versions of the classics, you know, the shortened versions of that.
Where did you get it? Because I can't find it on Amazon or Netflix.
Google TV.
Oh, okay.
We have a smart TV, so just logged into that and was able to rent it from that.
Because if I have to watch one more Disney Princess movie, I can't find any of the classics on. You know.
We're always, can we watch movies with people in them?
Yeah. So hard.
Which I would, by the way, if you do find it, do not pay the extra to upgrade HD because the movie is so old that it did not make a difference. So one of the things we've been talking about sort of as we talk about each love language is, and so last topic I want to spend on quality time before we move on to gifts is sort of identifying that whether this is your child's primary love language. And so, to take a step back on sort of what we talked about in the first class as an introductory matter, the point they make in the book is that in addition to giving your child unconditional love, the best way to reach them is to meet them on their wavelength, and by that is identifying which love language sort of speaks to them the most, which one is sort of, for lack of a better term, the most efficient way to show them love. And the recurring theme in this book is that your child is sort of hardwired to either give you or solicit the type of love that they're looking for. And so in this case, you know, the child saying, "Mommy, Daddy, come play with me. Mommy, Daddy, come do this. Mommy, Daddy, come do that." And they're, I mean, so if there seemed, to your point, you have one child who is actively seeking attention more than the other, I mean, that may be sort of them tipping their hand on this is sort of the best way to reach them. And so I think they said that quality time above all else is probably the easiest one to identify just because children are so outwardly verbal about the need for it. And so I don't know whether you've seen that in your own children, but that's probably the easiest identifier as to, okay, this is what the child is most looking for. So moving on, I doubled up because I had my really hard time wrapping my head around the idea that the primary love language of a child is getting gifts and embracing the idea of just giving them things for love. Because every child likes to get stuff, right? I mean, I don't think you find one that sort of turns it away. But to give you an idea of what we're actually talking about here, because I think I had a little trouble with myself, is let me find my passage here. The giving and receiving of gifts can be a powerful expression of love at the time they are given and often extending into later years. The most meaningful gifts become symbols of love, and those that truly convey love are a part of the language. Yet for parents to truly speak love language number 4, gifts, the child must feel that the parents genuinely care. For this reason, the other languages must be given along with the gift. And so the idea there, and I think this goes into the theme of condition, children being very good on spotting what they feel is conditional love versus unconditional love, is distinguishing between gifts versus payments for services rendered, or bribery or kickbacks. They actually use the words in the book. And they really strongly make the point here that the children really understand when they're being bribed to do something. And so if a child is looking for the receipt of gifts to sort of fill their emotional love tank, you know, they need to make sure you feel like they're not giving a conditional gift like, "Oh, you did your chores, here's X," or, "Oh, you did a really good job at this, here's Y." It's finding a way to give gifts that are meaningful to a child at an emotional level that are not tied to something else that they've done or did not do. So toss this out there for discussion. Can we think of any gifts that we've given recently that either we thought may have been unconditional, but may seem, you know, our children picked up on as, oh, I'm getting this because of X, or maybe in our own lives, you know, our own children, childhoods, if we can think of times where we got something where we were excited just to get it, or we were sort of disappointed because we felt it was tied to something. I mean, I'm curious if there's been experiences. I mean, I know I've sort of failed to do this, particularly once again with my 8-year-old, because this is sort of, as he grows, sort of figuring out this. I tend to buy, he does well at a soccer game, and I get him like a new pair of cleats or something like that. It's not, you know, getting him a gift. It's, okay, you did something great, now I'm going to, a reward rather than a gift. And so it's something that I struggle with, is trying to find ways to sense what my children need and then just give that to them, for lack of a better word, no strings attached. So that's one area where I'm trying to work on and be better about it. And I know my wife is probably nodding her head yes, just in a sense of just spend less money. But, and anybody else have any experiences they'd like to share? Jeremy, told you I'd hold call.
No, I mean, I think, I mean, this morning, right, I got out of bed, and I mean, the kids had a good day yesterday, and, you know, and I went this morning to James and got them donuts and kolaches and stuff, right, and it was, and I think they knew it was because, you know, I had come in earlier this morning before they bribed me or I bribed them, or I don't know, that, you know, that they'd had, you know, we'd had a good day yesterday, and, you know, and so I went and got them clutches and stuff. So, I mean, things along those, you know, and then, you know, just electronic time. We're limited to a couple hours on the weekend, but, you know, it's, they're not going to get it if they don't, you know, kind of behave up to expectations, right, or we'll start taking some time away. So they know there's definitely rewards and there are definitely strings attached, right, and so there is, you know, they try and do their best to get all of those that are basically require them to behave appropriately, I guess.
And to be clear, this book is not suggesting to not also use bribes for your children. Yeah. It's saying that in addition to bribing your children, occasionally you might want to reach them on the gift giving for just giving's sake. And one of the topics they go to in this book, and Mattingly don't give a lot of good advice on, they just sort of address the topic and then say, you know, good luck, is finding the way to make the most out of your giving. You know, if we don't present a gift as an expression of love, children may just treat it as an expectation of receipt of something. And yeah, sort of asking yourself questions about what message your child is getting when they get what you're giving to them. And I think the most clear aspect in our lives, at least, is in terms of making most of the giving is managing grandparents.
No, I was just complimenting you guys, actually, because so our kids have three sets of grandparents because my parents are both divorced and remarried. So I was actually just complimenting you guys on your Christmas giving because I think you guys gave books and maybe like one other toy. And I mean, my parents, we still probably have 5 or 6 things from Christmas that I have just thrown in a cupboard and haven't even opened because I don't know what to do with it. So, grandparents.
Yeah, I mean, my mother in particular, I dread like the 6 to 7 weeks leading up to Christmas because I'll get like 7 text messages a day saying, well, would the kids want this? Would the kids want this? I was like, no, they don't need, you know, they don't need that. You're just sort of saturating them with stuff. And let's just be, you know, I try and find ways to say, just be thoughtful about what you're giving them. Why don't you, you know, FaceTime them and talk to them and try and sort of glean out what they want as opposed to just sort of sending them things to open. And we really struggle with that come holiday time in our family. So I have no answers. If anybody has solutions, please let me know. Because, I mean, children are once again, smarter than we give them credit for. They know when their love is trying to be bought. And I think as they get older, at least this book can make the point that they can start to resent that they think that they're getting that in lieu of other time. You know, one of the points they make in here is sometimes a gift is easier to give than emotional involvement. And children are really good about picking up on that. And so they, once again, this book is great about raising issues, really bad about, frankly, about providing practical guidance on how to address those issues. Every once in a while, they'll give an anecdote about, you know, a child that the psychologist come across who faced a situation, but very, very few parallels to my children I've discovered so far. But what I guess the takeaway that I had from this is trying to be cognizant of not ever using a gift as a substitute for time, patience, and presence. And so, like I said, I have no solutions on how to do that, but I like to think we've been good, you know, other than my admitted bribery or kickbacks I mentioned with my 8-year-old, about just not buying them unnecessary gifts in the household. I think.
Well, I like the gift of something that involves quality time, like giving them a gift that involves doing something or being together, not just a gift that they're going to throw away or not care about, you know. I like to think about gift giving in that way.
Yeah, I think the most emotionally connected I think I've been to my daughter actually was this past week, was that I sort of surprised her and set up Disney on Ice for her and five of her friends. And so we, you know, the dads and daughters went out Friday night and did that. And she's still talking about it. Like, you know, thank you, Dad. She can't read and she saved the program. I mean, so she's found a space in her room for it. So, you know, I think I saw the opportunity to give her something that was meaningful. Also let us spend time together and sort of checked a couple of boxes. And like I said, I think I lucked out there. Like I said, I'm not an expert on this. So just sort of one example that I found helpful with my children. But sort of one of the, I guess, in terms of identifying, I think this is probably the trickiest one to identify out of all the five love languages, on sort of identifying the just like I said earlier, every child likes getting stuff. So how do you realize when it's really reaching them on an emotional level? And here they say to sort of look at the children who really make a big deal out of not actually what they got, but in the actual fact of just receiving it. The example they gave in here was a father who takes a lot of business trips and always brings back his two daughters something from wherever he's been. And there's one child who is super excited to get the gift, finds a special place in their room for it, sort of puts it on the shelf and just sort of beams after it. And the other child who is appreciative of receiving it, but then wants to talk to their dad about where they've been and what they were doing. And so looking and seeing how the child reacted to receiving the gift, I think is the biggest tipping of the hand on how that gift is reaching that child on an emotional level. So sort of focusing on how are children acting when they get the gift? Are they just happy to get it because they got something? Or is it, you know, are they happy, you know, or like the other example they gave is unwrapping presents on Christmas mornings. You know, our children just tearing through the paper as fast as they possibly can, whereas they may say a child who primary love language is receiving gifts is they'll focus, they'll take a look, oh, how pretty is this bow? Oh, how nicely is this wrap? I'm going to take my time and really enjoy the experience of unwrapping the gift. It's sort of more a child that may be in that camp. So anybody in here who may, based on that, think that, you know, they've had seen that reaction, any of their children, or are they like our children, just tearing open as fast as possible and without regard to the act of giving itself?
It's kind of hard. It's not related to Christmas at all, but like my older daughter, I don't think this is her primary love language, but you know, if she needs something and I recognize that she needs something, then we'll intentionally go out. Like if she didn't have any dresses and she went to this cotillion recently and needed some dresses. So That, I mean, to her, that was kind of exciting because we went out shopping for intentionally for dresses, and it was just the two of us. And she really kind of values those gifts. I think, I don't know if it's the spending the time together, the you know, oh, this is something kind of special because we don't go shopping a whole lot. And if we do, we're just kind of going for one thing. Because she's getting older, she had some of her whole bedspread and stuff was more childish, and she wanted to redo her room for Christmas, or for her birthday, she wanted that. And we couldn't do it all at once, so we kind of did it in phases. But that really seemed to mean a lot to her, and she's taking all this pride in her room and cleaning it now. And that, I think that was a really special gift for her. She felt like, oh, no, I'm older now, I've got the more mature, you know, duvet cover and all this stuff. And so, you know, I don't think that's, like I said, her primary love language, but I think that meant a lot to her.
Yeah.
I think we need to get our daughters together because my daughter's really similar in that. She's very sensitive and quiet. My oldest one, 7-year-old. Because I was going to say the same exact thing. We don't get to the store together. Amazon brings us our clothes, you know, but or Children's Place. But, like, I got a box for her one time, and when something came, a dress or a jacket or something she needed that I was just, you know, going about, she needs the next size up kind of thing, and she acted like, oh my gosh, you know, you got this for me. And she showed such gratitude, which was so trusting, and I'll take it, of course. But I was like, you know, she viewed it, you know, I guess her love language is, you know, you love me and you got this for me and you thought of me, when I was kind of like, well, I need to just get your new size up. You know, you're, you know,
yeah. And those are great points. And that's a great segue. The last thing I want to talk about here is when we talk about gifts, I don't just mean things that are unnecessary. I mean, the packaging of items that you would be getting them anyway, necessities, school clothes, something for their room, like maybe it's a comforter, maybe it's painting the walls, and finding a way to package it in a way, you know, whether it's putting, you know, wrapping it or just finding some way to deliver it so the child feels, you know, special in receiving, even if it's something they might have otherwise needed anyway. It's more, once again, it's not the focusing on what they're actually getting, but in the act of giving it to them, the children are focused on. So
we painted her room too, so it was like a multi-phase thing, and she saw us doing that. We were going to get it done before Christmas, so we did it like the 2 weeks before Christmas. So she saw the time. I mean, it's not just, she saw the effort that we put into it.
It's a rite of passage. Yeah. To mark that time too.
Well, and as I mentioned earlier, the idea of gift giving, this is why I packaged them together, really, I think, ties in well with quality time. I think there's meaningful opportunity to address both of those in sort of in the same activities. And so, but I think with that, we've hit the top of the hour. Anything else anybody would like to share before we go get our children from wherever they're at?
Spend quality time.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for your time this morning. And I will be out next week, but I think either Mother Erin or another substitute will be stepping in.